Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is faster, smarter, and better email marketing automation. DotMailer is trusted by thousands of leading brands around the world. You can start your free trial today at dotmailer.com/futurecommerce and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off applicable DotMailer packages.
Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip, question mark? I might be Philip. I might also be an artificial intelligence abstraction of what you might believe Philip to be.
Oh, we're talking about body data today, aren't we?
Oh my gosh. Well, we need a new term, but I think that's kind of become our brand term. If we ever opened up a t-shirt store on futurecommerce.fm, which would never happen, but if we did, body data would definitely be.
It won't happen.
Well, it might.
Shut down that idea too.
Yeah. Somebody, if someone taking notes, who's taking notes? Show notes. Matt, get on that. T-shirt idea. There's so much news. This is a lightning round show. We also have in just a few minutes, we're bringing back Future Policy with Danny Sepulveda. Really excited for that.
So good stuff. Really good stuff ahead.
Holy cow, some good stuff there. And so buckle up, lots of stuff happening. Also want to welcome back our sponsor, Vertex, rejoining us for another run of episodes. And so we've got a lot of momentum. But without any further ado, okay, Brian, let me tell you a story.
Tell me the story, Philip. I want to hear it.
So it's just a little bit of like a sensitive topic, but it goes with a whole bunch of different sort of ish body, like it's this nice overlap of the things we were talking about in our predictions episode. So just kind of set it up a little bit. The intersection of digital personal identity rights, right, and body data and body image sort of technology, and as it's advancing and how it's coming to consumer products. And I feel like there's a lot of news this week in the last week or two that hit on a lot of those topics. So that's kind of this open-ended sort of conversation today in that vein. So I saw on, I believe it was an Associated Press article not too long ago, about 2 weeks ago, where a bunch of online communities put out, you know, a large sort of unified statement that they were going to be banning some smaller communities that were developing among them that focused around artificial intelligence applying people's likenesses in a pornographic way. So this sensitive subject, but it's gained the term deep fakes. And so these communities, actually, there's a really great write-up on The Verge that you could go check out. But these communities effectively were taking video from notable actresses and using still frames from high-resolution video for training data to apply to nude photos and that sort of thing. And so, but there's no real legal consensus on deep fakes and what they are, but a lot of communities came together and said, these are not something that we want to support. So this is kind of an impressive thing. There was a community on Reddit, that was the deep fake subreddit, was banned by Reddit. Also Pornhub, GiffyCat, Discord, and Imgur all came out, and they banned like hundreds of communities that were around these. And so I felt like this was hitting right on the topic of that scary sort of Black Mirror-esque world that we now live in, where you can unwittingly, if a video is out of view on YouTube, your face could be unwittingly applied to literally any context in some of the seediest and darkest ways.
Exactly. This is why
without your consent, and there's no way for you to manage that.
Yeah. And like you said, there's no, like, the legal ramifications are unclear because we've never had technology to do it at this level. And so, you know, this is where, you know, all of a sudden your digital likeness is, it's PII. You know, you should have the ability. And this is something that, you know, you're going to see come up in litigation, in lawsuits, and all kinds of, you know, different ways. You'll start to see even like entire, like, bills at the national scale, at the federal scale, about how your body data can be used and when and where and how, at a much more detailed level than we've seen in the past. I think we've seen some states start to take this on, but I'm not aware of anything at a federal level yet that really will address how to handle your body data and treat it as PII, or and I think maybe even PII is the wrong term. It's probably a new type of data we're dealing with here that needs to be addressed in ways that we've never really addressed digital data or any, like, this is data just we've never had before in any meaningful way.
Well, what I find really sort of troubling is that there were a lot of communities that Reddit and others have turned a blind eye to for years that were specifically that were focused around still images. There's this incredible story that was, I think, in Wired about 10 years ago or 12 years ago about how Gillian Anderson from X-Files fame, I don't know if you know her. She at one point in time was the most photoshopped person on the internet. There were an incredible amount of fake images of her in all kinds of suggestive poses and such but she was photoshopped into a lot of these images, and they were suggesting a lot of it had to do with symmetry of the face and how easy it is to apply certain people's faces, especially when they're very symmetrical, to other people's bodies. But those kind of images and photoshops have been around for decades with nobody actually doing anything about it. And I think we could all agree that that's harmful to somebody in some way when they're applying your likeness. But it's the advent of computer-assisted and AI-assisted fakery here that is taking it to the next level. And
right.
It's blurring the line of realism.
And let's talk about, you know, not just body data here, but anything data. We were talking with Greg Steinberg at Something Digital, and he's like, well, what if people applied this to products? And like,
yeah,
you could change any scene to represent your product. You know, with AI, you know, a video, a commercial, you could apply the Coke filter to life. You know what I mean? And everything that anyone's holding that they can drink is now a can of Coke. there's a lot that can happen here that can, I think the things we've all seen in movies where, you know, people are applying unbelievable graphics and doing all kinds of cool, you know, film editing and overlays and CGI, all of that. Like, now that's available to you in the palm of your hand, you know, I'm simplifying it quite a bit here, but like, this is now available for consumers, or at least businesses, to take advantage of in a pretty easy way.
I mean, that is so, and I'll give you some other examples that are not in, you know, sort of this, you know, a salacious sort of way. But I remember back in 2016, there was the announcement at Adobe Max Creativity Conference that they have a tool that they were in, you know, alpha working with as part of their, you know, Creative Cloud suite, that after 20 minutes of training data of spoken word, you could pretty much make... You could train an AI or a machine learning algorithm to parrot back phrases that you would type in another person's voice. And the example that was given at the time was Key and Peele. So Jordan Peele was hosting the event with Adobe, and they demoed the process by editing audio of Keegan-Michael Key, who is Key, you know, Jordan Peele's comedic partner. And they made him say that he was like making out with Jordan instead of his wife. Like, they took this phrase that already existed and they rearranged it with just typing based on training data to make it say that he, you know, kissed Jordan three times. And this doesn't just stop there. If you even look around, well, about a year and a half ago, there was a face-to-face algorithm that was nothing more than a tech demo, and it doesn't look so great, but this is now almost two-year-old technology that was applied to fake CNN broadcasts that took a target actor or source actor and overlaid it with, you know, political figures to show that they could make, you know, George W. Bush and Vladimir Putin saying things that they didn't actually say. And I feel like in every one of these instances, and I'll just kind of leave it here and I'll let you kind of chime in, because you're usually the positivity person. I cannot for the life of me think about one way in which this is a positive contribution to society. I can't. I cannot see where this technology could ever be used for our betterment.
Yeah. Full stop. Yeah. It's an interesting point. I think that there are ways that this technology can be used that could be leveraged to sell things. And you know, businesses can use this type of technology as a tool. I think that's very clear to me. There may be other use cases. I should probably save this for an FC Insiders article where I actually have the time to think about it and actually plan out what I'm going to say about it. but I tend to agree with you. I think we're going to see, and we talked about this way back in Future Commerce episode 8, but people are going to be able to have control of their body data, be able to leverage that body data for a variety of different reasons. They can sell it. They'll be able to, you know, it'll outlast you posthumously now. Like, your body data is something that you're going to need to have someone sort of monitor and like be in charge of after you die, because otherwise people can use it for, I know this is real. Yeah.
But isn't that like, don't we already have, carry on. Sorry.
Yeah. And so, you know, for like models, and maybe everyone's a model now,
you'll Lord be able knows to I am.
You'll be able to give, you know, companies the ability to use your body data for specific reasons, like a snapshot in time, or your body data for your whole life, or to be used in one very specific way, or in all ways. You know, you'll be able to have control of how your digital image is used. And the question is going to be, you know, how are we going to how are we going to enforce this? I have no idea. Enforcement's right. Going to be the biggest issue, because like you said, this can be used in so many bad ways. Like, this is such powerful technology that if we don't have a good way of governance, then it's going to get out of control really quickly.
But in a world where we don't need, So I think that some of this is novel in that we don't actually, for a lot of the celebrities who are affected by this kind of thing, we have a wealth of training data because they're, you know, high resolution video and images are everywhere to train, right? But I think we're also sort of skeptical because these sort of fakeries have been around for some time. But for some of them, we don't even need fakes to exist when people are hacking iCloud and putting out their, you know, private images that they take of themselves. And so my thought process around this.
Whoa, hold on. So your implication is basically that privacy doesn't exist anymore at all.
Well,
kind of.
Not that it doesn't exist anymore, but even if you solve and legislate, I guess this actually creeps up on another issue that we're having right now as a public conversation in the United States around gun control. At some point, like, the conversation will always come back to, just because we legislate it doesn't mean that it's going to control people's behavior. Just because it's illegal is not going to make it cease to exist.
Right. That's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, because once it happens and it's out there, it's never going away, right? Like, the internet's forever. So,
I mean, honestly, though, actually, there are some things that do get wiped off the internet that don't exist anymore, right? Like, I don't know. There are examples of that where people have, but what's required, especially when it's someone's likeness or when it's someone's, you know, with someone's you know, personal photo or something like that. It kind of comes back to like the fappening. Like, you come back to that moment, and you have people who are having to trademark their face, and people who are having to like register trademarks and send Digital Millennium Copyright Acts to take, you know, DMCA takedown notices to sites like Reddit for them to like actually just enforce a copyright that's me and you are not allowed to have that picture.
Yeah.
Like, that just at some point, and I know we've talked about this on the show, at some point where this technology is a weapon, this technology is a weapon, and certainly the information, you know, that the disinformation campaigns and things that I can see coming down the pike, like what's coming in a weaponized technology, I don't see how, you know, other than counter warfare, I don't see how having this technology helps anybody, certainly in a commerce context.
Now it's time for our weekly segment called Future Policy, brought to you by Vertex SMB. As always, we're joined by Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Danny Sepulveda.
It's actually fascinating to me the degree of political traction that this issue has gotten. So as you know, last year, Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC and the Republican majority of the Federal Communications Commission, chose to repeal network neutrality protections that the Obama administration had put into place. And what happened immediately, even before the repeal, as people knew it was coming, was a fairly widespread uprising of folks who supported the rule and believe that your access to the internet should not be interfered with by your last mile service provider, whether that be a telephone company or a cable company, whoever it is that provides service to your home. Nonetheless, our colleagues at the FCC chose to move forward. There's now legislation pending to impose state-level network neutrality rules, and there have been a series of executive orders in a number of states, Vermont, Hawaii, Montana, New Jersey, New York, where what the governors of those states have said is that if a company provides telecommunications or internet service to any government agency, those service providers have to comply with network neutrality rules. The original network neutrality rules were 400 pages long, and they involve some fairly complex concepts around network management, two-sided markets. And I've been working on this issue for 20 years, and I'm really involved in technology and telecommunications public policy. And I've never seen an issue that has gotten so much traction among the public. My hypothesis is that, one, people really love the concept of the internet as a public space, open and accessible to everyone on a relatively egalitarian basis. The second thing is, I think people don't appreciate a regulator behaving in the best interest of the regulated as opposed to in the best interest of the public. Now, in fairness to my colleagues at the FCC, they would argue that, yes, while the internet service providers support the repeal of network neutrality and it is in their economic interest to have the rules repealed, that that's not why they did it. They believe that if you own pipes going into somebody's house, you should have the freedom to contract with the information providers that are trying to deliver content into people's homes different treatment in order to maximize return on investment. And that that would in turn encourage additional investment in infrastructure around the country. From my perspective, I appreciate that argument and I appreciate that my colleagues on the other side of the aisle believe it. I believe, however, particularly in a market as concentrated as broadband service delivery to your home, there's an excessive amount of incentive to manipulate that gatekeeper function for non-productive ends, but really just to extract tolls and rents. For that reason, I think that network neutrality should be protected and preserved, and I think that my party believes that. And secondly, I think that we believe on our side of the aisle that it should be protected and preserved because it's worked. The way that people access and use the internet now without having this intervention between them and their experience by the internet service provider has worked really well for innovation and creativity and creation at the edge. So where we stand now is Congress is considering repealing the FCC's decision. It's highly unlikely that that will happen because both the House and the Senate are controlled by Republicans. There are now, I believe, 49 members of the Senate that wish for a repeal. So we only need one or two more senators, I believe, to agree to repeal the rule, in which case the Senate would vote to repeal. But it's highly unlikely that the House would agree, or even if by some circumstance the House did agree, that the president would not veto a repeal. So for the purposes of this administration, we are unlikely to see a restoration of network neutrality rules. There are lawsuits pending against the Federal Communications Commission for having, in the minds of the people filing the lawsuits, acted arbitrarily and not in accordance with administrative law. And the courts could throw out the repeal of network neutrality, which would just return us to status quo ante with the Obama rules. And we'll see how that turns out. Once the courts make their decision, it will create a political dynamic in which members of Congress who support or oppose the rules will have to come to some decision about whether or not they wish to write into law some form of compromise. Where we are is network neutrality rules have been repealed. They are unlikely through the legislative process, given the current majority, to be restored. And the courts are reviewing whether or not they were appropriately repealed. There's an immense amount of state action. There's a lot of activism out there among the grassroots in favor of network neutrality. And we'll see what that means politically in the midterms and going forward.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries. For every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll, Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by DotMailer. DotMailer is used by thousands of marketers around the world. It has quick and easy campaign creation with a world-class intuitive interface. The DotMailer team is always on hand, from email creation, creative, and delivery to dedicated consultancy helping you build your own success story. DotMailer is built to play well with others. You can build your own marketing cloud by extending DotMailer or integrating it with your existing e-commerce and business platforms. Become a smarter, faster, better marketer and create sophisticated and measurable campaigns with DotMailer. Go to dotmailer.com/futurecommerce to start your free trial today and be sure to use the offer code FUTURECOMMERCE for 20% off DotMailer packages. Thanks again to DotMailer for supporting Future Commerce.
In a commerce context, body data is really useful, but using it to, like you said, sort of, accomplish things with people's image is just dangerous.
Right.
But
that's not going to stop people.
The thing is, I don't see it not being used because, like you said, like this is a technology that exists now. This is going to get used. It's going to be used by businesses. It will be, people are going to, there will be use cases for this in business. It's just going to be a matter of like, now that it exists, we can't go back. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
If I have to draw sort of parallel here in that, like, aside from spokesperson and like, generational sort of licensing groups, like I think about, the Elvis estate or Marilyn Monroe, who, posthumously are repping everything from Chanel to, the Hard Rock Hotel. And aside from an estate controlling a likeness as a brand that extends beyond your death, all I see this being novel for in a commerce context is us having more and more Reba McEntire, Colonel, what's the guy's name? The like Reba McEntire KFC Colonel.
Colonel
Sanders, right? Yeah. Freaking A, holy cow. My brain exploded trying to pull that one out of the archives. But we see more of like, I don't need more Jim Gaffigan Colonel Sanders to make me buy fried chicken, but I feel like that's probably where we're heading with the application of this technology towards digital spokesperson.
Yeah, well, and also micro influencers. Like, I think that's the other thing. Like, right now we have very like bigger, like big names, that are doing all of the repping. But what if what if using AI we could determine who the best person to influence another set of people is? And then,
you just dug something up on this, didn't you? Did you not? This was a story.
It probably was a story. I don't remember what story this is from, but yeah. So essentially, we'll use AI to figure out who the best influencer is for a certain set of people. Then that particular person will be approached and given money to have their digital body rights be used to influence that certain set of people. And that certain set of people may be in a specific geographic area, but it might also be spread out across the entire world based on specific DNA factors that,
Keep going. This is good.
I am getting a little Black Mirror right now, but okay, let's move on to the rest of this conversation.
But that's not your MO generally. So that's where I take it seriously.
Let's move on to the rest of this conversation, which is, the rest of the stuff that's happening with body data right now, because 23andMe has been advertising absolutely spamming us on the Winter Olympics. If you're watching through the NBC app, on your whatever streaming device you use, you've probably seen like the 23andMe ad like 50 times already. This, 23andMe is just one example of DNA mapping, personal DNA mapping. But there's a ton of other like really specific stuff going on with tests and they're really, really interesting things with DNA testing. I wish I had the other article that I just read about DNA testing, but it's getting better and better. And you're able to determine more and more stuff with DNA testing. And in fact, this is what it was. It was a company that's matching DNA to medications. So you have your DNA scanned and then you'll have a better understanding of which medications will be effective for you. I think you sent me
that's something. in that personalization sort of, personalized to you kind of a
so why can't we have
product bent?
Why can't we have like that exact same thing determine which people will best influence us? And then,
perfect. So actually, I was trying to find the article while you were talking because I knew it was a news story that I'd picked out. VentureBeat, there's an article out on VentureBeat, actually came out yesterday or the day before, that there is a company called Influential. who have just launched a social intelligence platform to help to find influencers for brands with the help of IBM Watson's artificial intelligence.
That'll do it.
LA-based Influential uses three different application programming interfaces for Watson to predict whether Fortune 1000 brands will succeed with a particular influence-based marketing campaign. And it can find people based on micro-segment affinities.
Yep. There you go.
To predict whether or not they would be influential for a brand for micro-influencer engagement. And that's there's your that is literally what you were just talking about, and it's happening.
And it's happening. So there you go. And think about this even further. What if they took, you know, training data from dating apps, saw what kinds of people were attracted to in general based off a variety of factors, and then use that data to help, like, you know, like create influencers based off of like, you know, attraction factors that, you know, that it would allow people to, you know, trust somebody more, or, you know, or like them more because they look a specific way, or they, you know, they have a certain personality or whatever it is. Like, this is something that probably will, you know, it's a, like you said, it's already happening. It's just going to get bigger and bigger.
You have to, what platforms, so this always for me comes back to where this is happening, right? And it's always on social.
Instagram. Like
Everything's
happening on Instagram.
Everything is happening on Instagram. This is the insane thing about what the kind of data research that's happening and the data mining that happens on Instagram is that your attention in a list of images that all might seem innocuous to you, it doesn't even require at this point an intent to tap into and see an image in like larger. If you loom in a window of, you know, suggested, if you're looking at like the Explorer, like the magnifying glass in Instagram, like all the tags and all the data and all the machine learning data that they've gathered about that image and machine vision about what might be in that image is used to understand more about you and what you like. And this is what's incredible. There was a story out on L2 earlier this week, which is now, I guess, a Gartner company. Has L2 always been a Gartner company? I don't believe so.
I think
so.
It has been.
I don't know. It shows my ignorance
It's been at Gartner for a while.
So L2 is always popping up for me when they're talking about these sorts of interesting sort of influential social, social influence around retail. And so this happened to pop up for me this week, which is, can Nike keep Snapchat alive? So they were the very
this
first
is pretty
company.
Good.
Yeah, they were the very first company to sell directly on Snapchat, selling the new Air Jordan 3 Tinker sneaker without ever having to leave the app. And that combination or that collaboration is signaling that Snapchat might be moving more into e-commerce. But in the same week, was it Kendall Jenner? Kendall Jenner, I think, tweeted, "Who the heck even opens Snapchat anymore?" causing a $1 billion dip in their market capitalization. And that is even when we're doing interesting things in retail, even when social influencers have a platform to sell products, and even if we have enough data to target them specifically to people one-to-one, you know, in this case, Snapchat could be on Instagram, even then, it comes down to a handful of people having the eyeballs that really determines the fate of those platforms. And right. So there's influencers for the influencers. And that's where the success of the platform is going to lie, is if you can keep the attention of the people that matter. And you can't, there's no amount of AI that you can apply to keep, you know, the Jenners or the Kardashians attention.
Sure.
Span,
that's true for like, you know, I agree with you in that, you know, those influencers are big enough where they can have that kind of effect. But I think for, you know, and there's a lot of data. If you look at like Ad Age, there's a ton of data out there. There's an article in Ad Age, I should say, about this,
Adage.
Yeah. Right. About how micro influencers are having an insane effect on people above and beyond sort of your standard influencers, like Kardashians and Jenners. If you're a brand that, you know, you probably don't want to go get a big celebrity. You probably want a series of micro influencers.
This is what's incredible is the amount of popularity that's being gained. I know that we kind of were wandering off the subject a bit, but the amount of popularity that has had in the long tail of people that are considered to be influencers on Instagram as a platform that wouldn't traditionally have had any kind of corporate sponsorship by any, you know, major retail brands or branding manufacturers in any way, but they do because they have millions and millions of eyeballs. And it's only because of their engagement in social. It has nothing to do with any other kind of accolade or aptitude, which is a completely different thing in our world. 15, 20 years ago, you would have had to have been a top level athlete who worked your whole life to gain that kind of influence. And now just about anybody can do it for just about anything. Or we can fake you looking like you know how to do that for just about anything for anybody. If we use enough AI.
So back to the general discussion of body data again. You found a pretty cool company that really is in line with what we talked about way back on episode 8, Shapescale, shapescale.com.
Shapescale.com.
It's pretty unbelievable. It's a 3D body scanning tool that's for fitness tracking and visualization. So You stand on the scale and it records your body, and then you can get a picture of yourself from, you know, a 3D view, and then you can actually visualize different things that, you know, like how and actually see how, you know, you should go about changing your body to accomplish what you want to do. It can look at like localized different like muscle mass and fat mass, and you know it's pretty crazy. You get heat maps of, you know, where your body's changing based on updated scans and you know, visual goal tracking, and just it's the next generation of scales beyond a quote unquote smart scale that we have now.
And I have to wonder, like, aside from it being cool, because it's kind of cool. Like, what do you do? Like, I don't, they say it's $700, although I see a $349 price point for at least one of their models. I never would discount someone's want to just, you know, use something like this for absolutely no good reason. But I have to wonder, like, you know, does this, like, where does it go from here other than it being cool? Like, do we, if we have more information about our quantified self, does that build confidence in us, or does it have the opposite effect? If I'm working harder and harder and harder, and I'm seeing that I'm, you know, have no change day to day in my heat map on my body in my 3D model.
The beauty of that is I think you can see that what you're doing is not working. You have to try something else. So you can have that data. I mean, I talked about this on predictions. We know as we've gathered more and more tools like this, and, you know, we can really keep track of every part of our body and our lives and everything, you can actually mine that data and then do tests, you know, like your own A/B tests. Well, if I do this, you know, this doesn't change at all, so I shouldn't do that. I should stop doing that. It's not helping me. Like, I need to, you know, I need to try something else to accomplish that. At least that's what, someone should be using this for. How it actually affects us is a different story. I think that's what you were kind of getting at, is maybe it's, you know, as we've gathered more data and had more screens and more points of information and, you know, more points to share that information with everyone in the world, that's not necessarily, I mean, you know, we're more depressed than we've ever been as a country. we're more out of shape and, you know, more obese than we've ever been as a country. And, you know, and I'm talking from a US centric point of view right now, obviously. Sure. Maybe all of this information is actually not helping us. But I think what it does allow is it allows someone who does want to, you know, attack this, like it's a, you know, attack something like, you know, body sculpting or weight loss or whatever it is, like it's a business problem, and you know, that treat their life like it's something that, you know, that they, you know, they can test and make changes from and have data on and can actually do something about, then maybe this is a pretty cool tool.
Yeah. Okay. So that was amazing and sort of meandering and kind of an awesome open conversation. I want to hear what our listeners think. And if you are listening to this today through a smart speaker device or on a podcast app, you have another choice, speaking of choices, to listen. We're now on Spotify. So Future Commerce can be had on Spotify. So make sure to subscribe to us over there. But we want to hear back from you. So go to futurecommerce.fm. And hit us up and lend your voice to the conversation. We want to hear more from you. What do you think about deep fakes? What do you think about AI and sort of body data as a weapon? And also, what do you think about you know, the advent of personalization for products and on product perspective and using body data to drive personalized products and customized products for you? We want to hear about that. So hit us up, and you can always email us at Brian with an I and Philip with two L's. At futurecommerce.fm. And we're on social too, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Awesome conversation. Thanks to Danny for contributing on Future Policy. And until next time, what is it we say?
Retail tech's moving fast.
Future commerce is moving faster. I'll remember it one of these days. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.